Hey everyone, this is Michael Vandervoort, and it's another edition of the Left the Boom Show. We are living in a time of very rapid change in the world of labor relations. And Phil, I wanted to start out today by talking to you about, you've been doing this a long time, as have I. Have you ever seen such a crazy environment as what we see right now and some of the things that we're having to deal with?
Well, first, thank you for calling me old. But yeah, I do have.
You're younger than me.
There is a lot of gray hair in the beard. Quick answer, no. Like this is truly, you know, an unprecedented time. I've been doing this a long time. And you know, it's funny, when I first started this in the like early 90s, you know, every year there was some like revolution in union organizing that was going to happen. I remember very early on there was this thing called Union Summer. Where they were going to have like all these young kids, they were going to train them up to organize in workplaces across the country, and it was going to revolutionize organizing. After about 10 years of falling for that every single year, I finally was like, there's not going to ever be a revolution in organizing. And lo and behold, here we are, you know, 30 years later, and there's been a revolution in not just organizing, but across the government. The president, of course, famously said he was going to be the most pro-union president ever, and boy, has he delivered on that promise. And it's really just sort of across government, and which is a great segue to our guest, Michael.
Exactly. So to help us break some of this stuff down and have a conversation about what is going on with the NLRB, and I know it's covered in the press a lot, but it's great to have Mark Friedman, who's the Vice President of Workplace Policies at the Chamber of Commerce. So welcome to Left the Boom. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm well. How are you guys doing? Notwithstanding the subject of conversation here. Just to pick up on that for a moment, it's sort of what's going on right now is so beyond what we've seen. It almost makes you long for the days of the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. It's like, funny, I was going to say something along those lines as well.
Wow, you know,
the good old days,
the quaint old Obama administration. And mm-hmm. Whoever thought we'd be saying that?
Yeah, no, it's so totally true.
That's the sort of way to put it in the context. But yes, anyways, gentlemen, it's nice to be with you all and happy to have a conversation today.
Yeah, we really appreciate you being here. Wanted to start out by talking about something that's still developing, actually is supposed to go into effect tomorrow. So maybe you could start us off with a bit of a briefing about that, which is the OSHA walk-around rule, which I know has a lot of employers scratching their head about how to respond and deal with that. So maybe we'll talk about some of that as well, but can you kind of give us what that is and where the status of it is right now?
Sure. I mean, it's a very timely subject. As you mentioned, it's set to go into effect May 31st, which is tomorrow. It was issued on April 1st, insert joke here. And what it says is, I mean, it's very simple. It's a blissfully short regulation. What it says is that an employee can designate any third party to be their representative during an OSHA walk-around inspection. And to just step back for a moment, the statute says that employees and employers, and we'll talk about that in a moment, can have a representative accompany an OSHA inspector. The regulations in OSHA have said for many years that employee representative shall be an employee of the company. Mm-hmm. What this regulation does is remove that requirement that it be an employee and just says any third party. And when I mean any third party, I mean a employee at a non-union workplace can designate a union representative as their representative for the purposes of a walk-around. Now, it doesn't stop there.
Now, Mark, I was going to say, like,
please, go ahead, Phil.
It could be, I mean, it could be a competitor. It could be the media. It could be, you know, someone
insert outside agitator here.
Mm-hmm.
Truly, I mean, it's I've concocted nightmare scenarios, and no one's told me they're wrong, where you could have a union representative, you could have a anti-fossil fuels representative, mm-hmm. you could have a plaintiff's lawyer, you could have possibly a competitor, you name it. And even worse than that, you could have multiple unions. You know, imagine a workplace where you've got more than one union competing for that workplace. You could have more than one union going through. Bottom line is, it is up to the employee who they choose for the representative. And the employer is essentially powerless in terms of that choice. Now, the way the regulation is supposed to work, and quite frankly, I think a lot of this is still needs to be worked out and you know, figured out as these things go into effect, as these examples come up. But the OSHA inspector, known as a COSHO, the acronym is CSHO, Compliance, Safety, and Health Officer. The COSHO is supposed to make a determination that, and the phrase is, good cause has been shown that the third party is reasonably necessary to aid in the inspection. Now, I mean, that puts a lot of responsibility on that COSHO. I mean, I think one of the dirty little secrets here is that the only people who like this regulation less than employers are the COSHOs. Mm-hmm. But the theory OSHA is operating under is that, well, this COSHO is going to make that determination right there and say, yes, this person is necessary. My bet is it's going to be the rare COSHO and rare example where they actually say, no, this person is not reasonably necessary. I mean, I don't know why, you know, an OSHA inspector would want to get in the middle of that discussion. Yeah. They're going to, my expectation is that they'll accept whoever the employee says they want to have as their representative.
I mean, saying no, they're going to have to justify, right? Saying yes.
Right.
Say yes. And who's, you know, you can't really, I mean, there's no real argument at that point. Like, they're the expert doing the investigation.
Right. You know, let's understand a few things. First of all, if you have a unionized workplace, this is all taken care of. You know, they come in, they ask the employer, is this a union workplace? The employer says yes, then they go to the union representative, and that's foregone. There's no issue there. It's the whole question of what happens in a non-union workplace where this becomes troubling. And as I mentioned, the statute says the employer can have a representative. And I think, you know, in moments like these, employers may want to think closely about who they could bring in as a representative. Mm-hmm. There's no restrictions on the employer's choice there. And so, you know, my gut instinct is that the problems that this is going to raise are less about how that third party conducts themselves during the inspection, because if they're smart, they'll keep their head down and they're just going to walk through and not be a problem. Because if they become a problem, the OSHA inspector does have the authority to say, sorry, you can't continue. If they're smart, they're taking advantage of coming into that workplace and gathering whatever they can, absorbing, you know, looking at things, taking notes, maybe if they can do it, take pictures, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they're gathering intel for later use. I mean, that's the value to them of being able to come in like that.
Yeah. There's also just to
tie it up in a bow, the way I've crystallized this whole regulation is to say, this is government, this is OSHA imposed trespassing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. If you think about it, you know, if any of these people walked up to your front gate and said, hey, you know, I'd like to show up, I'd like to wander around your workplace for a little while and take some pictures, maybe talk to some employees, see how you guys operate, you know, you'd say no. You know, you, for very valid and legal reasons, you'd probably call security and have them escorted off the premises. But if an employee says, no, that's the person in that purple SEIU t-shirt that I want to have come in and accompany the inspection, you have virtually no recourse.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's basically government OSHA imposed trespassing.
Now, kind of going back to the inspectors, you know, don't really like the regulation. I'm curious what you think about. So just as like a practical standpoint, you have, you know, an inspector who shows up with this random person that you have questions about their qualifications and whether or not they really are reasonably needed for this inspection, you're going to raise those questions. And so, you know, the inspector is now in a, you put them in a, you put the company in a position where it's like, okay, look, you need to go sit down in this conference room while we figure out who do we want to have as our representative, who, like, who is this person that's not from OSHA that you want to bring along? What are their qualifications? Like, you, there, you create this whole scene that's going to happen. I'm just curious, kind of like, what, you know, what do you, how do you see that playing out? What do you think about that?
I think it's right now, in the absence of any real examples, it's a little bit hard to know exactly how it's going to play out. Mm-hmm. And I think it may depend on, you know, who the co-show is and what their mm-hmm. feelings about this are. You know, this could vary from co-show to co-show.
Yeah.
Sure. But certainly, I think the employer is at liberty to raise those questions about whether this third party is, you know, whether good cause has been shown. Don't forget mm-hmm. that phrase.
Right.
You know, that this party is reasonably necessary to aid in the inspection. Now, let's be honest. There are certain situations where that may be valid. I could imagine language skills. I could imagine, and the previous regulation allowed for certain technical expertise. I could imagine those situations. Mm-hmm. I do not imagine that the person coming in from the union who's trying to organize their workplace is going to necessarily demonstrate those valuable expertise and skills that would obviously make them necessary for conducting an inspection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if I'm the co-sho,
or yeah,
you know, if I'm the co-sho, I'm saying, what do you mean they're necessary to for this inspection? I know what I'm doing. I don't need this outside person. Mm-hmm. So yeah. there's lots of little angles here. Now, you know, I think part of it is going to be the question of how much of a fuss does the employer want to make? And they, I think they're going to have legitimate questions to raise. How far they want to push that is going to be the sort of debate.
Yeah.
You know, employers do have the option. They've always had the option to go to the court and say, no, OSHA, I'm not letting you in unless you go get a warrant. Now, they'll get the warrant.
Yeah.
But doing that, you know, you could raise the issue. We had this discussion at a recent chamber meeting about how an employer should respond. And one of our members, one of our OSHA practicing attorney members, suggested that you could go for the warrant and say the warrant only covers the OSHA inspector, does not cover third parties. I'm not totally convinced that's a winning argument, but mm-hmm. there's nothing that would stop you from making it.
Yeah.
You know, these are all sort of uncharted territories. And I think there's a lot of this stuff that has to, you know, come out in the wash, and people are going to, you know, we're going to have some examples of this. Now, just to give you guys a little bit of a history lesson here. The reason we know this is such a union desired regulation is that in the Obama years, notwithstanding our warm thoughts about the Obama years now, the United Steelworkers asked OSHA for permission to do this. And OSHA issued a letter of interpretation. And they said, oh yes, the regulations allow you to do this. That was a letter of interpretation, which we all said, oh, you can't do this through a mere letter of interpretation. You have to do this through a full-on regulation. Well, here we go, it's a full-on regulation. That letter of interpretation was rescinded by Secretary Acosta, so it went away. And now we're back to this issue having been done through a regulation. But the point is, the genesis of this is a request from the United Steelworkers.
Yeah, it's been an objective for a while. So, Mark, I know that I'm not sure all who the parties were, but I know that there have been several business organizations that have filed, I guess, lawsuits seeking to enjoin this thing. And we're right on the, like, we're hanging on the chamber and others, right? And I know you can't predict the outcome of a court ruling per se, but what's the general take right now? What are you hearing or seeing, or is there anything you can share?
Well, I can certainly talk about the issues that the complaint raises. And, you know, it's built around the idea of an employer's property rights, that they don't have to let people on if they don't want to. It also brings in, and this is a very important point, it brings in the National Labor Relations Act problem, which says that a union cannot be designated as representing employees unless the employees have so chosen. Mm-hmm. Typically, as Phil would certainly be able to tell you, that's done through a secret ballot election, or at least preferably through a secret ballot election. Mm-hmm. But in this instance, what they're saying is that this employee can identify a union as their representative, as if the union has been chosen by the employees, where in fact it has not. So that's a direct contradiction to the National Labor Relations Act. Mm-hmm. So it raises that point in the complaint. And, you know, it basically makes the point that this regulation is outside of OSHA's authority. And obviously, it's at least bad policy. So we filed it down in Texas in one of the Fifth Circuit, courts. And it only got filed last week. So it's just underway.
Yeah.
Sadly, for this discussion, this lawsuit is not positioned to block this regulation from going into effect. So we have to expect that as of tomorrow, this regulation will be a live fire exercise.
When you say that, like the chambers asked for an injunction, but you're just saying, like, timing wise, it's not likely that there's going to be an injunction.
It's not positioned that way. We didn't seek an injunction because in order to do so, you have to allege irreparable harm, and that's something of a high bar. Mm-hmm. So it's a direct attack on the validity of the regulation, and, you know, if the lawsuit is successful, it will invalidate the regulation and cause it, you know, stop it from going any further, but it's not set up in a way to block it from going into effect tomorrow.
Well, the first employer that, you know, is asked to invite, you know, an union organizer onto the property as part of the investigation, I assume that part of their, you know, defense in the, you know, warrant litigation is going to be this regulation should be enjoined. Like, they don't have a right to do it. At that point, they are irreparably harmed. So,
right. So, you know, there's two ways to challenge something like this. So what we've done is we've challenged it on its face. Mm-hmm. And then what you're talking about is an as applied challenge.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as this goes into effect, if an employer wants to argue that, you know, they shouldn't have been required to let this person into the workplace, then they're challenging it as it's been applied.
Yeah.
And those could emerge as well.
And I mean, a lot of these lawsuits get thrown out because there hasn't, you know, you don't like the regulation, but it hasn't been applied to you. So there's, you know, you're not a legitimate plaintiff to challenge it. So that, like,
well,
you probably have, you know, that will be one of the arguments that Department of Labor will make.
Not quite. You know, what we're alleging is that this regulation is not valid because it's inconsistent with OSHA statutory authority. Mm-hmm. And you do have to allege certain matters of standing. And we do that through the association and its members who will be affected by it. And then, I mean, there's ways that you establish standing through that method, and it's a well understood process. And then this, you know, the other way is to say, as a employer against whom this has been applied, then you have direct mm-hmm. impact, and you can make the arguments through that.
Yeah.
So,
all the stuff we just talked about is big kind of inside the beltway, inside the courtroom stuff, which is where these things often play out. But let's
geeky OSHA stuff.
Yeah, yeah, geeky OSHA stuff for sure. But let's go to where a lot of our listeners live, which is like inside the plant, right? Inside the factory, inside the warehouse for a minute. From the employer perspective, like some, you know, a lot of companies have requirements about people coming into their facilities with, you know, like, just you can't photograph, you can't leave these areas. I mean, there's all kinds of different rules that people have for legitimate reasons. And as you've said very eloquently, this is basically government enforced trespassing that employers have to allow. So where's the friction between like trying to run your business in a reasonable manner with visitors to your plant being safe and in the right place and all that sort of thing, which is a definite concern for employers. And this law, where do employers have to balance now? I don't know. Can you help us with that at all?
Sure. And I should note that OSHA has a fairly extensive FAQ section on their website talking yep. about a lot of these sort of, you know, implementation questions. I won't say they cover everything, but I'll say they cover a lot of things that might be in people's heads. I think the answer to your question is that employers are going to be obligated to treat any of these third parties as if they're a guest that they would have brought in. So, you know, if you get invited to go take a tour of a workplace, you know, they'll put you through a certain briefing about safety issues. They should provide you, like, you know, PPE, mm-hmm. you know, some specific PPE. I know I went through a tour of Amazon, and they gave us little toe caps to protect our toes mm-hmm. and that kind of thing.
Steel toe shoes, yeah,
right. So I think the expectation is that you would be treating these people as if they were any other guest on your property.
Yeah, but there's some places that you don't take guests, right? So there's some right. equipment that you would not let a guest anywhere near. But those are places, presumably, that these guests are going to have access.
Well, I think OSHA tries to anticipate that question and does indicate that employers can restrict access if there's something proprietary or sensitive in that area. And the previous regulations allowed for that as well in the context of an employee who wouldn't have had, you know, clearance to go into that other area. Mm-hmm. So there is some history of saying you can't just, you know, if there's something sensitive there or proprietary or however you want to protect it, then you can restrict the access to the third party. Obviously, the OSHA inspector gets access, but, you know, other people would presumably be able to be kept out.
Yeah.
I read those FAQs a while back when this first kind of rolled out. And I think that I read in there, and I don't know if you'll know this specifically or not, Mark, but I thought I read in there where if you had a normal practice of requiring like non-disclosure agreements because of protection of certain, and it probably can't just be a blanket NDA, but is beyond restricting someone to say like from a secure area, can you, if your normal practice is to make guests sign non-disclosures, are those things in place though?
I believe so. And I think the key phrase there is normal practice.
Yeah.
You know, you can't all of a sudden come up with this because you've got a third party you don't want to have in your workplace. But if your normal practice is that anybody coming in as a guest signs a non-disclosure agreement and you know, restricted from using their cell phone, all those other types of things, those can be used here. You know, those can be applied in this context as well. But I think you have to make sure that that's your normal practice. You don't mm-hmm. want to be called out for saying, oh, you just decided to do this because you had somebody you didn't like. Which, going back to what employers should be doing, that may be something that they want to make sure that, you know, that they have in place as a regular policy on the chance that somebody's going to come through that they really don't want to have there.
Yeah. And probably, you know, like ideally you sneak in there some waiver of liability for, you know, someone who, you know, takes a fall,
sure.
you know, while they're yeah. on the inspection. The other thing I would say, Mark, I totally agree. You know, make your normal practice be what you would want to do in this particular situation. But there is a big difference between a guest that you have invited into oh, yeah. your property and a guest that is being imposed on you. And it does seem to me like it would be legitimate to have a different set of rules for a guest that's imposed on you versus one that where you are vetting them. You know, like you don't have to say yes to like anybody that wants to do a plant tour. So the people that you would give a plant tour to, you know, generally are going to be somebody that you're okay with having them in there. Like I could see making a distinction between the two types of visitors. Although I do agree, you would rather the case be, well, everybody.
Let me put it this way. And of course, at this moment, I have to issue my disclaimer that I'm not giving legal advice. You know,
me
I don't want people running around.
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer.
You're closer to doing that than I am. But I don't want people running around saying, hey, Freeman at the chamber told me to do this. But I think the safe approach for employers is to build in those protections so that they apply across the board. And you don't want to be sitting there trying to defend something new or different for this type of, you know, visitor, only called guest, that you didn't have every other visitor go through. That's not a very strong argument. You need to be able to say, this is our standard practice. And maybe that means your new practice for visitors is more rigorous than it was before.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that means that even the people you like have to sign NDAs or, you know, whatever it is. Treat it as the worst case scenario. What do you want to have the person that you really don't want to have on that job site have to go through, and make everybody else go through it too?
Yeah, I think that's a good sort of practical
advice. Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, I was thinking about when you talked about like the search warrant, because there's always a rock in a hard place, right? Like, it's been a minute since I experienced an actual OSHA walkthrough, but I've been through a few of those and a couple other government agencies in my career. And, you know, there's always like, you're tempted to say, like, we can't do this today. But as soon as you do, it creates a certain level of animosity, and you rarely get over that, you know? So there really is a rock and a hard place thing here. But in this case, like, I'm wondering if, like, you know, in the interests of, you know, things better served or whatever, maybe it would be better to take some of that pain and get your OSHA lawyer or whoever, you know, whoever you're, because you don't always have the luxury at a manufacturing plant, you know, based in, say, somewhere in the, you know, upper peninsula of Michigan or something. You don't always have your lawyer right next door at your beck and call or whatever, right? So have you guys talked about any of this stuff and come up with any of these kind of recommendations?
Not other than what you just, I think, outlined. And I think that's a very astute approach, which is employers should know who they want to call at the moment that this arises. You know, if this comes up and they won't have a lot, they probably won't have any warning, because OSHA's inspections are not telegraphed.
Right.
Right. So you're going to have OSHA knocking at the door. Query how the employee knows that they're going to happen. I'm not quite clear on that mechanism yet. And that's part of this thing that I think has to get worked out. But let's assume, for the sake of discussion, that somehow they know that this is happening. Maybe they've called in a complaint, and that's what triggers the inspection. Probably the way that this would work for.
I don't see how it works any other way, right? Like if it's an OSHA, I mean, because OSHA does walk-arounds for a lot of different things that are not. So obviously, if there's an injury, then maybe the injured employee might be the one that they talk to, or you know. But it seems like this is mostly going to be triggered by an employee complaint.
Well, and Phil, you know this from your work with organizing campaigns. That's pretty much a standard tactic.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
You know, get the inside employee who's sympathetic to the union to call up OSHA and have them come in and conduct an inspection that is otherwise unnecessary and just this side of harassment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that practice has been out there. And so I would think that that's probably the most likely scenario in which this type of third party question comes up. But the point is that employers should be thinking ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're smart, they're thinking, okay, this could happen. What do we want to do if it happens? Who do we want to have ready to come in, or, you know, who do we want to contact? And I think it's smart to have an OSHA attorney that you work with, OSHA/ you know, labor attorney. As I mentioned, there's two sides of this coin.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just think it would be a good exercise for people to think through this a little bit and visualize what it's going to look like if it happens.
Yeah. I mean, we've put together, the ink is like still drying, but kind of just a framework.
Whatever the digital equivalent of ink is.
Yeah, right? Exactly. The pixels are, you know, just, but they, like a framework for how to think about all of these questions, right? So there's the who's mm-hmm. going to be the first person approached? Do they know like what to do? And that's not really different from like the current world, but it's just you're
right.
You know, what's different is this outside person maybe joining, right? So then,
right.
So then there's like OSHA attorney, obviously important, but if you want to have a representative, given Michael's scenario, like you should identify other people that are local and will be available that can act as a representative for the employer on that walkthrough. I think anytime you're going to have an outside guest, you want to have somebody that's representing the employer that is at least just observing the walk around. Where did they go? What questions were asked? What did the outside person say or do? You know, you need, and you have to have all that figured out in advance. Going back to, you know, this whole question of what are their credentials, who's going to be questioning all of that. I do think, Mark, you know, as we were talking about, you know, how far do you want to push this with the potential cost being like OSHA inspector is going to be mad at you, but OSHA inspector just kind of wants to do the inspection, right? So,
yeah.
So I do feel like if you kind of put them, so there's a different rock and hard place here. So one is like they have to go get a warrant if they want to come in. But the other thing is you could go like, look, you're welcome to come in and do the inspection. Like we're ready for you to do the inspection right now. It's this other person that we have questions about. And I'm sorry, but if you're going to bring them, we have these objections to them. And if you're going to bring them, then you're going to have to go get the warrant. And the inspector could just go, yeah, I don't really need them. Well, I'll just go do the inspection now. And then maybe that's the answer.
Well, and again, we don't really know with any great certainty how this is going to look, mm-hmm. you know, on the ground. But I would really work through that phrase, good cause has been yeah. shown that mm-hmm. this person is reasonably necessary to aid in the inspection. I mean, that's the hook for the employers to push on.
Right.
That's the thread for them to unravel this. And they can ask the OSHA inspector, excuse me, you know, show me what the good cause here is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is good cause is evidence. There has to be some evidentiary yeah. reason why this is a good person to come in, not just that employee has identified them. Mm-hmm. And you know, I they can push on that point. Now, at the end of the day, I don't think they have the leverage to say, you OSHA inspector can come in, but this other person can't. I think yeah. the regulation indicates that if the OSHA inspector makes that determination,
mm-hmm.
then that's essentially the end of the discussion.
You could give them the option though of like, I agree that you are an expert and have a right to do the inspection that like if you want this person, we want a chance in front of a judge to talk about whether or not there's good cause. And so that's like that's sort of where we are at the decision.
I think you're right. I mean, at this point, it's all reasonable, you know, mm-hmm. interpretations.
Yeah.
And it is going to be a matter of how far does somebody want to push that? What's the context? What you know, under what situations is this person being brought in type of thing?
Yeah.
And I think you would have an argument in front of a judge to say, yeah, I mean, good cause has not been shown. What's the good
cause? Right.
Right. And so again, it's a question of how far that they want to go with this. There is an argument there that I think they could explore.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, what the likelihood of success is going to be, and that's going to depend on the judge and all those kind of factors that you know, you can't quite identify at this stage. But the way OSHA builds this regulation, they really push this phrase about good cause and reasonably necessary for the inspection. So in their eyes, the OSHA argument is this is going to aid in the inspection and provide, you know, more complete inspections. That's their argument. You know, so from that standpoint, the employer should be able to push back and say, no, I don't think good cause has been shown type of thing. Yeah. And that would be the opportunity to push back.
we're getting close to time. There's two things I want to make sure we cover. And then Michael, I don't know if you've got any other like last questions. So the one thing I want to make sure we cover, back to the point you were just making, and we were talking about sort of the framework that we've come up with, is I think the most important thing for the employer community to really, we call it tabletop exercise, but like OSHA inspector shows up at the plant in the UP, like what happens, and mm-hmm. really walk all the way through, who would we want to be called? Do the people that are there know to call them? How do we want this good cause shown thing to be discussed? You know, where physically at the location is the OSHA inspector going to be like sat? What happens if, you know, so like all of that needs to be really played out. Who needs to be aware that it's even happening? What's the procedure like during the walkthrough? What happens after the walkthrough is over? Kind of all of that stuff needs to be played out so that you have a plan. These are going to start happening, you know, they could be happening Monday.
Potentially as of tomorrow.
Yeah. So,
but Phil, you're absolutely right. And the way I would say this is to say employers should have in place already a plan for, as people say, when OSHA comes knocking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should already have something that you know how you're going to operate, who's going to be in touch with them. You know, is it your safety director? Is it your HR person? Whoever the person, you know, you should have that all ready to go.
Yeah.
The only difference is you're going to add another, you know, addendum to it that says, oh, and if this third party issue shows up, here's how we're going to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
true. So that's kind of a big wild card, and it opens up a lot of questions, right? That people aren't, you know. So my last question, I guess, before we go to final thoughts, I haven't seen anything, but I wonder if maybe you're aware of anything. Is there anything that beyond the you know, the expertise and showing good cause, is there anything that enumerates sort of the role that these folks are allowed to play, like, or is this also still undefined?
Well, the FAQs do go into some level of detail about that, you know, this person can't be disruptive. You know, if they are disruptive to the inspection, then the OSHA inspector has the authority to tell them to leave, that they can't go any further. But in terms of how they conduct themselves, short of that, and presumably with the restrictions that an employer can impose, for instance, in using, you know, cameras and that kind of thing, they're there to accompany the inspector. And theoretically, under the OSHA, you know, vision, to aid in the inspection. So if there's a technical issue that they know about, they can point out to the OSHA inspector what should be happening, or, you know, what the hazard is that is, you know, needing to be protected against, those types of things. I mean, you know, that would be the ideal scenario where this person actually brings some specific expertise that's useful to the inspection, as opposed to just they're the union organizer and that's who the employee knows. Mm-hmm. You know, so in terms of how they conduct themselves and how the inspection proceeds, my vision is that the OSHA inspector is the lead here. They're the ones driving this process, and anybody else is tagging along and trying not to get in the way.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So, all right. And as I said, if they're smart, they're going to keep their head down and not become a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not that smart sometimes, Mark.
I said if, you know.
Yeah. Once they're in, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm in. Like, now's my chance.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you know, sanctum sanctorum. I've crossed the gates. I can, you know, but that's the point. They're there to gather information. They're not there to create a problem.
Yeah, right.
They shouldn't be able
to. Yeah. So let's close with this. I've been a member of the chambers, first the U.S. Chamber, but then the Labor Relations Committee for, I don't know, a long time, probably 15 years now. And I just think it's a really, really valuable resource for the employer community. Just for those of our listeners that aren't familiar with the chamber and the great work that you do, maybe just give them a quick pitch as to why they should be involved.
Oh, sure.
Oh, boy.
No, thank you, Phil. I really appreciate that. And obviously, we enjoy having you as a member. You know, we benefit from our members in terms of understanding what these big policy debates are going to look like on the ground. Mm-hmm. I mentioned we just came through our meeting. We have two meetings for our committee. The Labor Relations Committee, it meets in May and November. So we just had our May meeting earlier this month. And that's where we have really good granular conversations about what things are coming on, what the chamber is saying about them, and listening to our members about what they think, you know, might be the problems. For instance, I mentioned, you know, I think you were there. One of our OSHA practicing attorneys said, "Yeah, you should go get a warrant and challenge it. The possibility that this third party isn't going to be included in the warrant." I mean, that's a theory. I hadn't come up with that, mm-hmm. But that came from one of our OSHA practicing attorneys. So, you know, our committees, I think, at least I hope they are, and this is generally how I gauge how good our meetings are real opportunities for collaboration and input and back and forth conversations.
And so you bring folks, I mean, the administration is invited to these meetings. Like they will speak to the meetings. You have the chance as the regulated community to talk to the regulators like in advance of these rules going into effect, and they listen. Now they don't always, like when it's the other party, they don't always come out with a regulation the way that you want it, but like they do get but they do get really good feedback from the employer community and get a little better understanding, and I do think that it shapes the regulatory environment, you know, a shade better than it would otherwise be, because there is this this back and forth. And then, of course, the chamber itself is able to, you know, you guys go
right.
Lyra, and you do a lot of really great work to try to, you know, keep these regulations reasonable.
What I would say is that we know the administration folks. You know, and this is regardless of the administration. I mean, I'll tell you, back in the day with Tom Perez, the Secretary of Labor, we invited him and he's like, "I'm coming. I have to cancel all this stuff. I'm coming to the
chamber." I remember that. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. That's where he gave out his personal cell phone and his staff.
He was great. Oh, no.
but the point is they appreciate the opportunity to get in front of our members and tell them what's happening.
Yeah.
Sometimes take input and have conversations. They will, let's face it, these people know how to defend what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're not going to all of a sudden smack their head and say, "Oh gosh, we hadn't thought about that." Oh, you know, mm-hmm. But they want that. They're perfectly capable and happy to have that interaction. And so we do focus on bringing in the decision makers to these meetings, because we think that's the value add for our members, is to get in front of them and be able to listen to them. And just to complete the thought of what we do, you know, we are involved in every stage of these efforts. So when there's a regulation being proposed, we're obviously doing comments. A lot of times, like with the independent contractor reg and the overtime reg, the Department of Labor, to their credit, held listening sessions, and I was on several of those. Mm-hmm. Not to their credit, I don't think they listened, but that's another story. You know, we're very active in the comment process. We get great comments submitted by outside counsel that oftentimes set the stage for the litigation that we, you know, sometimes has to happen.
Yeah.
So, for instance, you know, OSHA walk around and independent contractor are two great examples. We're leading the litigation charge against those regulations. And then, of course, you know, we're all over the Hill telling our friends up there, you know, the problems that are happening and looking for legislative answers if we can find them. You know, the appropriations process or other legislative vehicles. That's a very high bar. I'm not going to try and give anybody some false sense that we're going to be able to stop these things. But we always explore those options, you know, as we can.
Well, your litigation team is second to none. And like that, I mean, there's a lot of this stuff gets enjoined and I mean, you do have a really strong on these regulations.
That litigation center is really first rate. I mean, you don't have to be, but just about everyone is a former Supreme Court clerk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people are rock stars in the legal world. Yeah. And they work there because this is the kind of work they want to do. Mm-hmm. And they take that mission seriously. And when they go forth and, you know, like on this OSHA walk around, right, you know, they're using high profile, top flight lawyers. And yeah. you know, I don't know what our chances of success are, but I will tell you that we wouldn't be bringing the action if we didn't have good arguments.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not something that comes with at low cost or low time effort, all that stuff. So, well, listen, Mark, thanks so much for being a guest today with on the Left of Boom show. We really appreciate it.
I'm thrilled to be here, and I know there are some things we didn't get into in OSHA world, but you know, I'm happy to come back and we can talk more about those things.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back.
Yep. Yeah, we'll save that for another day though, and we're going to go ahead and end the show. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Good to be with you guys.
Yeah. See ya.
He's out of here.
Okay. I'll finish the recording.